Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. Is it possible to have spiritual growth without seva? Well, if you understand what seva really is, then it's a crucial part, an inextricable part of your spiritual growth. Why? What is spiritual growth? What is, when we talk about attaining enlightenment, talk about attaining samadhi, what is it that happens? Well, what happens is we become one with the divine. We have that experience of oneness with the creator and with the creation. And in the experience of oneness, we love. So when you fall in love, you experience a sense of oneness with the one you've fallen in love with. The minute you experience that sense of oneness, the minute you love, what do? You serve. So if your loved one is in bed sick, what do? You bring them fresh squeezed orange juice. You make them soup. You come, you rub their feet. You make sure they're warm. Right? Now, nobody has to say, oh, be a good humanitarian. Oh, do some seva. It comes automatically when you love. If your child, if your parent, if your spouse wants something, needs something, we do it. And interestingly, even when they don't want or need it, we still do it. When you're in love, what do? You make them breakfast in bed. You bring them the things that they like. Even they're not sick. You just wake up and you think, achachalo, today I'm going to make them their favorite thing. Today I'm going to give them a back massage. Today, this is service. Service is what stems out of love. Seva is service. And it is that which is deeply connected with our spiritual growth, because if there's not love, there is no spiritual growth. Love is a crucial ingredient. You cannot grow a plant if you don't have sunshine, if you don't have water. They're crucial ingredients. In our spiritual growth and awakening, love is a crucial ingredient. Doesn't matter who you love. Because if you really love, what you're loving is God. God through loving your family, through loving your colleagues, through loving creation, through loving the trees in your backyard, through loving your pets. I mean, it really doesn't matter what you love. As long as you love really deeply. As I was saying earlier today, if it's the physical form only that you're attached to, it's lust. If all you're attached to is form, it's lust. If we really love, we're connected to essence. We're connected to spirit. That's what I love when I love. It's not, oh God, I love your fingernails. Oh God, I love your kneecaps. What we really love is essence. And what that essence is divine. So service is the most natural outcome of love. But here's what's interesting also. It's a crucial component, even not necessarily as an outcome, even as a way of getting there. Because what happens with seva is the experience of understanding. I'm just a tool. It's not my will. It's God's will. In most ashrams, Paramartha Nikatan is actually unusual in many ways, but one of the ways we're unusual is that if you said, I want to do seva here, chances are the type of seva that we would have you do is things on a computer, professional work. Most people in most places, seva is things like cleaning toilets. That's the seva. If you go to most ashrams, even you don't say, I want to do seva. Most places have a rule, you must do seva. And the seva that in most places you have to do is the lowest, lowest level stuff. You're cleaning toilets. You're washing dishes. You're sweeping the floor. You're mopping the floor. Why? It's not that they can't bring in people the way that we do to do those jobs. It's that doing the lowest of the lowest work is actually what helps us remove the ego. Because we all think that we're better than what we're doing. And this is true for everyone ranging from a mail clerk to a CEO and everyone in between. Doesn't matter what your job is. Everyone believes that they've got a higher calling, a more important calling than what they're doing. And this is the game of the ego. And this is why in most places where you go for spiritual growth, what they're going to say is, clean the toilet. Wash the dishes, scrub the floor. Because what the seva does is humbles us. It helps us understand we're just tools. Not my will, thy will. And the last part of this is in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna speaks so much about karma yoga. He talks about three different yogas, three different ways of connecting with God, attaining enlightenment, having spiritual growth. Bhakti yoga, the path of devotion. Jnana yoga, the path of knowledge. And karma yoga, the path of action, which is seva. They're just different ways of talking about the same thing. It's that which I'm doing selflessly. That which I'm doing for the goal of union. Your seva may be help this person. But that's not really what it's about. What it's really about is a purification of yourself. And what Lord Krishna explains so beautifully is that all three of these yogas actually take you to exactly the same place. And they're not even actually separate. We think of them as separate, but they overlap in the way that I began, because if you love, you serve. So you could begin with bhakti yoga, but if your bhakti is real, if your love is real, you're going to serve. And if your love is real, you're going to want to know more about the loved one. You're going to want to learn. More and more. When you fall in love, what do? You stay up all night long. What did you want to be when you grew up? What's your favorite color? Where did you go to school? silly things. But we just, we're unquenchable, insatiable. We want to just know more. Tell me more. Tell me more. Why? Because we love. So you can begin with love, begin with devotion. You can begin with Gyan Yoga. Begin by learning, begin with wisdom. But the more we learn, the more we love. This is in Indian marriages, most of the Indian marriages are arranged. In the West, it's love marriages. You meet someone, you fall in love, you get married. Here, mostly it's arranged marriage. So the gyan, the knowledge, comes before the love usually. You can't love someone when you don't even barely know them. Slowly, 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 they get to know each other. And love blooms. And then again, of course, service is the most natural byproduct. But you could also begin with service. Through serving, if you're doing it purely, if you're able to overcome the ego that says, I have a higher calling, if you're able to overcome that and understand that what your calling is to connect with God, what your calling is to love God, this is just a way of purifying your ego. Neither seva nor sadhana brings God. Many times people think through sadhana I will achieve God, that somehow God will be happy with my sadhana and come. But Pooja Swamiji reminds us all the time that's not how it happens. God is there, the sun is shining, but our windows are so dirty that we can't see. What sadhana does, what seva does, is it cleans the windows so that we can see. It's not that either of them brings God. Just like sun salutations don't bring the sun. It's there. It's just our windows are dirty. So through the service, as we become purified, we love more. We may not love the thing that we're serving. I mean, I could be cleaning toilets. It doesn't mean I'm going to fall in love with a toilet. Washing dishes, I'm not going to, you know, fall in love with my hand soap, with the dishwasher. But through the service, as I purify myself, as I purify my ego, as I purify this ignorance, I'm able to just love more in general. So the love in me blossoms. There's your bhakti. And then, of course, when I love, I want to learn more. So all three of these go together.
You're listening to OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me. All those inner voices. You know, it's funny because people say, well, just listen to the inner voice. Yeah, they're all inner voices. So this is a very, very common issue. And there's two pieces I can give you. One is that we all actually know a lot more than we pretend we know. What usually ends up happening is we know what the right thing is, but then our ego or our fear or some desire comes in and starts rationalizing the whole thing to go its way. And usually, if we're just quiet enough, we actually are able to tease them apart, but we don't want to because we're so much more identified with the ego. We're so much more identified with the fear, with the longing, with the desire, that we'd like to believe that's the inner voice. But if we're really honest, we usually can tell. But we have to have that honesty with ourselves to really look. And when that knowledge comes, to not say, oh no, but it feels so much nicer this way. The other piece is simply practice. This is why we meditate. Most people turn to meditation when they've got a crisis. So I have to find my inner voice. I have to figure it out. I have to know what I'm supposed to do. And then I close my eyes to try to hear that inner voice. But in the moments of crisis, that's when all those voices come in. And it's very hard if you've never met your inner voice, if your own intuition is still a stranger to you. It's very hard to tease it out. And what meditation does is it familiarizes us with that inner voice so that when we need it, we're able to know, ah, that's the one. But usually, if we really have the courage to just be honest with ourselves, we can tell. Another last way to know is typically the ego comes in from the outside. Not at that moment necessarily. It's come in through voices. Our parents as we were growing, our society, siblings, friends, lovers, whatever it is, people whose opinion really mattered to us have said things either directly to us or just in our presence that we've absorbed, and it has become our own subconscious. So for example, as parents, so many people say, well, you know, I really want my children to have good values, spiritual values, wholesome values. I don't want them to be very materialistic. And, you know, but they're so materialistic. All they care about is, you know, buying things. And how do I make them more spiritual? And what they don't realize actually is, despite their best intentions, we don't have a materialistic gene. Children are not by themselves attracted by things that they see. And you know this because when you give a child, a young child, an expensive present, they're much more interested in the wrapping paper it came in, the box it's in. You always have to say to them, no, no, sweetheart, that's just the box. Leave that. This is the present. No, 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 sweetheart, that's just the boat. This is the present. You could give them an empty box and they'd be just as happy. An empty toilet paper tube. Your keys, their own toes. Right? I mean, kids can lie on their back and be fascinated by their own toes for hours, and we spend hundreds of dollars on these, you know, rotating things with glittery things, and the kids are just ecstatic about their own toes. So what happens, though, as we grow is we're sitting at the dining table or we're in the car with our parents or whatever, and one of them says to the other, "My God, did you see the clothes so-and-so was wearing? Did you see this? Did you notice that? She's gained a few pounds. She looked really fat. Do I look really fat in this dress? She had a new pair of diamond earrings on. God, I wonder where she got the money for those." Little just conversation that slips out. Nothing of any importance. We're not trying to give values to our children. We're just gossiping. We're just chatting. But what do our children pick up? Ah, fat is bad, diamonds are good. Old clothes bad, new clothes good. And then we wonder where they became materialistic. And I mention this in this context because the voices that are in our heads, other than our own intuition, are voices that have come in from outside. And if we can really look at them and tease them apart, ah, that was mom, yeah. Yeah, mom was always, you know, sort of unhappy and had the shopping therapy solution. Or yeah, she was always feeling, you know, not so good about herself and comparing herself to others. Or, oh yeah, that was my older sister or brother. That was my teacher getting a divorce, taking it out on us. Oh yeah, that's just our culture, the media trying to sell me things to make me feel bad about myself, so I'll buy their product. And then one by one, we can kind of tease apart these voices. Ah, that's just the myth of scarcity, telling me if I don't buy it now, I'm going to lose out. Telling me there's a limited amount of happiness and success in the world, that I shouldn't be happy with somebody else's because that's a chunk out of the finite pie that I have to eat out of also. Because this is all cultural indoctrination that ends up feeling like our inner voice.
This is OTRFM, part of the iOM Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Mike Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with inspiration and transformation. What happens to people that commit suicide? What happens to their soul? Well, what happens to the soul after death is the stuff that long, long courses are taught about. But really, really briefly, in short, in the foundation, The reason we keep taking human birth, the reason that we have this cycle of birth and death, the reason for this reincarnation, is that the soul is going to keep taking a body until this individual soul, the jivatma, connects with the Supreme Soul. Now, before I go any further, it's important just to mention, since we're going to do this quickly, it's important just to mention that actually on some level, all of that is an illusion anyway. Because on the highest level, all there is soul. There's no such thing as a plural of soul. You know, we talk about souls, plural. But at the highest level, it's just soul. Like it's just ocean. There's waves on the ocean, but ultimately it's all just ocean. So on the highest level, that's the truth. But when we turn the dial one notch, we get down to the level, the channel of our individual souls. Those individual souls which travel with our ego, with our mind, with our intellect, carried through the subtle body, from physical body to physical body, until I've burned through my karmas, my karmic bank account is empty, and I've recognized, not intellectually, but experientially, my oneness with the divine. So there's no shortcut. When we commit suicide, it's always in an attempt, a desperate attempt for a shortcut. This is too painful. This is too much. I can't handle it anymore. I need a way out. A shortcut to peace, a shortcut to serenity, a shortcut to joy, a shortcut to all of that I'm looking for. But sadly, there is no shortcut. And so if I've committed suicide, I'm just going to have to start over. My adopted daughter, actually, when she was here last time, said something that was actually so wise that I've held on to it since then. I thought, she's so smart. She was talking about suicide. Someone in her college had committed suicide. And she said, you know, what that means is he's just going to have to do his 10th class board exams all over again. And then he's going to have to do his 12th class board exams all over again. She said, I would never commit suicide because I never, ever want to do my 10th class board exams or my 12th class board exams ever again. And I thought, well, how wise, without necessarily intending for it to be quite so wise, because whether it's your 10th grade board exams or just the general troubles of life, if I cut it short this time, I've got to go through it all again. Human birth, what we're told in the scriptures, human birth is the greatest gift. And the reason it's the greatest gift is in the human birth, I can attain enlightenment. Why? Because in the human birth, I have the gift of that consciousness that is able to look at itself. And in order to attain enlightenment, I have to be conscious of the fact that I am conscious. I have to be able to take a step back and look at myself. And that's something that only humans can do. So this life is a gift. Because in this life, I actually have a chance of attaining that liberation, of attaining moksha. Which, as Pooja Swamiji always reminds us, is not only after you die. You can attain it here in the body. There's no saying you have to give up the body to attain liberation. The body is only a cage if I think of it as one. When we talk about jiva mukti, it's literally alive in the body but free. A prisoner's in the jail by no choice of his own. The jailer's in the jail because it's a good job. He's free. Gets to go home at the end of the day. He could quit his job anytime he wants. He applied for it. He wanted it. Gets to roam it freely. So it's not the jail that's the jail. It's being stuck as a prisoner. And it's the same thing with these bodies. It's the same thing with this life. It's only a jail if I see it like that. And so when we commit suicide, we start over. But sadly, it's going to be slightly more challenging even because we have accrued the karmic results of my suicide, which means the pain that I've caused to others. It means my duty in this life that I left undone. Lord Krishna is very, very clear in the Bhagavad Gita that you don't get a pass of karma simply by not acting. No, Arjun says, okay, fine, forget it. Don't want to do this. Don't want to get the karma. I'm not going to act. And Lord Krishna says, not so fast. Not acting is acting. You could sit on your hands, you could close your eyes, could sit down, but you're still acting. Your non-action is an action. If I'm walking down the street and somebody's beating a child in front of me, or a woman in front of me, or anyone in front of me, and I don't do something to protect that person, well, that's an action. My not protecting that person, my not doing something is an action. It's a choice. And I'm gonna reap the fruit of that choice just as any action I perform. So if I commit suicide, it's an action of the suicide that has caused pain to others. I'm going to reap that fruit in my next life. And I'm going to reap the fruit of not fulfilling my duty, which I was put here to fulfill. So it's not a shortcut. And if we ever feel desperate, if we ever feel like that, or have those moments, what it reminds us to do is to anchor ourselves to something that's not dependent on the outside world that goes up and down. To anchor ourselves to something that's deep within us, that is light, that is love. That same love that I've ever felt for someone who now may have left me or may have died, hence I'm distraught, but that love is still with me. The object upon whom I bestowed it isn't, but the love is. The joy that I once felt at some time in my life, well, the source of that joy is within me. That situation evoked it, but it came from within me. And to remember that, and to just literally, as difficult as it is, breathe through it. Getting the help that we need with the awareness that, as they say, this too shall pass. Just as it came on, so it will pass. But that there's no shortcut to to the peace or the joy or the freedom.
This is OTRFM, part of the iOM Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin, with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation. What is it like to give up all your worldly possessions and become a renunciant? It's so interesting because in this world, in this culture, we have this concept of success as the ability to have lots and lots of things. It's sort of the more things I have, the better off I am. I mean, think for a moment, even we use the word well off, right? What does well off mean? What's well off a synonym for? Wealthy, right? Rich. As though somehow the money you had in the bank were absolutely synonymous with your well-being. Nobody would say, well, she's really poor but really well off. I mean, you'd think, well, what does that mean? That's like saying she's really black but really white. It doesn't make any sense. They're opposites in our language. Well off means you're rich. As though somehow the numbers that come in my bank statement are actually the measure of my wellness. Now, we all know that's not true. But it's important to mention because even in the question, it implies, I mean, nobody ever would ask a question and say, God, what's it like to leave your desk job and go to Hawaii for a week? There's something inherent in all of us that understands, oh, well, that would be great. You don't have to ask a question. If someone says, yeah, you know, I'm going to leave my desk job, I'm taking a vacation, I'm off to the beach, nobody's going to say, why? What's that like? Because in our mind, we've labeled the desk job drudgery, a burden. Yes, exactly. And we've labeled a vacation on the beach heaven, wonderful. So it's good and bad. Obviously, when you've got the choice, you're going to leave the bad for the good. Yeah, I'm going to leave my desk job and go to Hawaii. But this same judgment comes in when we ask about leaving possessions, becoming the renunciate. Why would you do that? What's that like? And it carries in it the same value judgments. why would you leave something good? It's like saying, well, God, you know, I'm gonna leave this Hawaiian beach and go get a desk job. Then people would say, why? What's that like? So we have this sense that having a lot of possessions, having success is good, is what you should want. This is the mark of wellness. I'm well off. But then you give all that up? Why would you do that? What does that mean? And what's so important here, and that I just want to emphasize over and over and over again, is that which we have has no connection to how well off we are beyond a certain point. Now, if you don't have money to eat, if you are starving to death, yes, having some money to have food to eat will make an absolute difference in how well you feel. If you are homeless and you get money to have a home, that will make a big difference. If you want to send your children to school so that they're not homeless, but you don't have the money and somehow you're able now to send your children to school, that will make a big difference. But beyond the most basic necessities, beyond having food to eat, beyond having a roof over our head, beyond having access to basic medical care, basic education, there's no more distinction. But we've placed these value judgments. So as Pooja Swamiji always says, we focus on filling our shelves instead of filling ourself, because we're taught the fuller my shelf is, the happier I'll be. So we keep looking to fill those shelves. What I experienced on a personal level was having had very full shelves, having had all of those things, I was given, I have to be honest and admit, I didn't go out looking for it. If I knew it existed, I would have searched day and night. But I didn't know it existed. I didn't know this life existed. I didn't know there was an alternative. And that's true, sadly, in most of the West. In India, in traditional India at least, spirituality is such an inherent aspect of the culture that people know it. For most of us in the West, even if we have religion, there's very little overlap between the religion that I practice in my synagogue or my church and an experience of wholeness or fullness in my life, at least from my experience. So when I came here, just traveling, had taken a semester off of a PhD program to come to travel, when I was here, I experienced such an experience of fullness, of wholeness, of joy, of bliss, that it was worth more than everything else I had combined. The example that I usually give to explain what that might be like is, imagine that you spend your life collecting rocks or seashells on the beach. And you do it because it's what everyone else is doing. They're pretty, they're shiny, you look for the nicest ones, you hold them. Now you've got hands full of seashells and you feel happy. Then at one point on the beach, there's someone out of the blue with a bucket full of diamonds and they're just pouring diamonds out of the bucket. Now what are you going to do? Yeah, you're going to throw those seashells. Anybody here going to say, oh my God, I'm so sorry, I don't have room for your diamonds, my hands are full of seashells? we're instinctively going to drop those diamonds because intuitively we understand drop the seashells because intuitively we understand no matter how beautiful I thought they were, they're of a much lesser value than the diamonds. I am being offered something of a higher value. There isn't room for both in my hands. Therefore, I'm going to. There's actually a great, great story of a sage who one day found along the path where he was walking, a renunciant, found diamonds, put them in the bag. The renunciants usually walk with just like one little thing, you know, one little, whether it's a jar or a jug or a pot or a little bag, whatever it is, but he put them in. And a short time later, he met a man on the road, and the man asked him for something. So he opens up his little bag to see if he has what the guy's asking for. And as he opens it, the man sees the diamonds in the bag. And he says to this renunciant, "Oh, you know, actually, what I'd really love is one of those." And of course, he doesn't say diamonds. He doesn't say very expensive thing. He acts really stupid. He says, "I would just like one of those shiny rocks." And the renunciant says, "Sure, take them." Hands them to him. So he thinks, "Oh, this is so great. I've gotten away with everything." And he walks off with the renunciant's diamonds. A few days later, he comes back. He comes back to the renunciant. And he says, "I need to ask you something." And the renunciant says, "Yes." And he says, "Do you know what that was that you gave me?" And the renunciant says, "Well, sure, they were diamonds." And he says, "Well, then I need to ask you something else." And he says, "Yes." And he says, "If I give you back the diamonds, would you give me whatever it is that you've experienced, that you know, that enabled you to give me the diamonds in the first place? What is it in you that enabled you to part with those diamonds? I want that, because that's of infinitely more value than these rocks. That which you had that enabled you to give them up so easily, that's what I want. Because it took me a few days, but I realized that's of much more value." And for me, what happened was, it was intuitive. It was not intellectual. It was not something that I can say I realized in some great feat of wisdom. It was intuitive. That which I was given here, what I experienced here, was of infinitely more value to me than that which I had behind. And it was very clear to me that I couldn't hold both in my hands at the same time. All of the things that I'd been attached to, from material possessions to relationships to goals, all of those were simply means to an end. And this is true for all of us. And this is a little harsh, but bear with me and just take this home and let it percolate inside you. All of that which we do, regardless of how altruistic or compassionate we may think it is, we do it for one reason and one reason only, which is we believe that in doing that, we will experience happiness. On one level, on the most superficial level, I eat chocolate because I will be happy if I eat it. Go deeper. I serve others because in serving others, I feel good about myself. And then I'm happy. There's nothing wrong with being happy. I'm not saying this as a negative thing. Being happy is our nature. We should be happy. But it's important to recognize that actually the reason we do everything we do, the reason we're in the relationships we're in, is to be happy. Now, some of you could say, well, I'm not happy in my relationship. In fact, I'm miserable in my relationship, but it's just my duty that says do it. Well, what that means is that for you, the knowledge that you're doing your duty brings you more happiness than leaving this relationship would. You're not in the relationship as a martyr. You're in the relationship because living a life of doing your duty makes you happy. The end goal is always, I should be happy. And again, nothing wrong with that goal. It's a great goal. We should be happy. But we just need to recognize that for what it is, because so many of us live our lives convincing ourselves that, well, I would be happy if I did this, but I'm not doing that because blah, 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 blah. And it's important to realize, no, if I'm not doing that, it's because feeling that I'm the type of person who can withstand this or survive that makes me happier. And that's a higher happiness. I mean, anybody who has ever compared the happiness you get from a night in a pub to the happiness that you get from an afternoon with, you know, children on a cancer ward, or an afternoon reading to blind people, or planting trees, or doing some other form of service. Well, the happiness lasts a lot longer when we're serving. It lasts a lot longer when we're connected to others. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it's about what makes me happy. And for me, what I experienced here was so much more bliss and joy than all of the visions I had had of joy. When I get my degree, then I get this job, then I build my house with my white picket fence, and then that paled in comparison to what I had just been handed. The joy that I thought I was getting in my relationships or in my possessions or in the social life paled in comparison to what I was given. So I didn't leave anything. Renunciation is not the sense of I'm so great because I gave up that which was really good for something that's not quite so good just because it's holy. Renunciation is, through grace, through no credit of my own, through grace, I was able to experience the truth, which is, in this life, the happiness is greater than with all of my possessions, than in the life I was living, which is why we leave it. Because even as sannyasis, it's still about inner happiness. It's still about inner bliss. But it's an inner bliss that comes not from a pair of brand new shoes or a new story on my house, but on an inner connection. And so for me, that was what I was given. So it's a renouncing of that which didn't bring real happiness in favor of that which did. Which is why I made the choice. It's not a martyrdom at all. This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week, and I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on OM Times Radio.